Well, welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, the holidays are coming up, and all of us now have our cell phones. We've all become instantaneous, multiple photographers of family scenes, and the truth is we're not too much good at it. Well, we're lucky because in connection with the publication of a new National Geographic book called Dawn to Dark, Photographs, The Magic of Light, we've got one of the principal contributors to that volume on the line. Jim Richardson is a longtime National Geographic and National Geographic traveler photographer. And Jim, thanks for agreeing to visit in Chapel Hill, at least by telephone.
Well, it's good to be here with you guys.
I noticed that you have an affection for the state of Kansas, and I don't know whether you're calling from Kansas or whether we're talking to you from Kansas or not, but you have a wonderful studio and a display area there in the middle.
That's right.
Of Kansas.
We live in a little town out here, a Swedish American community called Lindsberg. We have a gallery here on Main Street called Small World Gallery. And it's our home, my wife and I, Kathy. And it's where we get to show off our stuff. And it's my office where I do all my research for upcoming stories for National Geographic magazine. And it's a place to call home.
Well, it doesn't keep you from traveling all over the world. I wanted to, when you talk about Kansas and in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, you talk about both the rivalry and the complementary relationship between the University of Kansas and the University of North Carolina. We exchange basketball coaches, professors, provost, and chancellors and presidents of the university. And so we've got this kind of weird connection with your people. But you're interested in photography and not from basketball. Tell us about the making of this book and your role in Dawn to Dark and why the light is a theme and an important part of your photography and that of your colleagues at National Geographic.
Well, this book, Dawn to Dark, Photographs, the Magic of Light, is the latest in the series that National Geographic has been doing every year during the holiday season. And it draws on that great archive of photographs that I and my colleagues have been doing for decades there at National Geographic. It really follows the day. It organized following the moods of the day, the times, starting before dawn, going through sunrise, into the morning, the sweltering heat of the day, the lingering late afternoons, the evenings, the secrets of the night. Chapter by chapter, it basically follows the day as our lives do, you know, of necessity, and spells it out in pictures and a lot of great quotes from a lot of great authors, and reflections from the photographers who took these pictures, and very much manages to invite us to sit back for a moment and turn off the world and to reflect on the moments of our lives, which we would do well to do a bit more of. And by so doing, you know, the book, organized as it is, very much is a gift to anyone who sits down and spends a bit of time with it.
Well, you're quoted in this book a lot. In the preface to the book, you mm-hmm. begin the reflection on the passage of the day, and at the beginning, at dawn, and I love
yes,
what you said.
And you know, as I mentioned there that I was as I was writing that, I was sitting there, and I was sitting there thinking about in the pre-dawn light, you know, about how our days are always full of promise and ambition, and how much we depend upon the time of day, the mood of the light, to determine our thought processes, our ways that we view the world, how we act at the moment, the stride that we take in the morning sunshine, the sort of the lingering stroll that we do in the late afternoon light, you know, all those things, and the way that the light affects us, and the way that the times of the day affect us, you know, So as I wrote that, I was very much thinking about just those kinds of things, and it was a gift to me a bit too, to have time to sit and ponder, to think about all those photographs that all are in the book, 200 photographs, you know, and to sort of be given the gift of time to sit back and search my mind, search my motivations, and to think about how those things affect me.
Well, I don't want to risk finishing our conversation without mentioning that in order to get a dramatic, this is not one of your photographs, but to get a dramatic photograph for the cover of the book, mm-hmm. you National Geographic expert photographers sent somebody to North Carolina to pick up a magnificent photograph of Lake Matamuskete in North Carolina.
That is a beautiful photograph. And I tell you, anybody who walks in the bookstore and sees this book sitting on the shelves is going to notice it. that is a wonderful photograph.
Can you tell us about that photograph?
Pardon me?
This is not yours, but I don't believe.
I wish.
And of course, our listeners can't really visualize it. They will be able to see it in bookstores, but it is a... It blends the water, the sun, and the trees. Some of us are familiar with that lake. I don't believe I've ever seen it so dramatically portrayed. Is this a sunset or a sunrise?
I think it is a sunrise, yeah. But don't hold me to that. I don't know why I think that exactly, but it just has that quality of dawn, doesn't it?
It
just shouts out at you that the day is coming.
Well, it's not fair. I want to talk about some of your photographs, but this one is the one everyone's going to see, even if they don't buy the book. And it is it's just dramatic. One of the things that you make as a comment along the way is that these great photographs are not, you know, they just don't happen by accident. That there is a construction, that they're made in some fashion. That these mm-hmm. that while this looks like a photographer may just came out and aimed his camera at the sun and got it. But he probably, what did you mean by you have to really work to get a photograph like this?
Well, what we don't know is how many dull gray mornings that photographer went out to that lake there and got nothing, to finally go back and find the sun coming out in all its glory. Too many times, I think people think that the photographs are sort of just discoveries, that you're sort of driving down the road, you see something wonderful, you take a picture of it. When in fact, you know, the photographers who really elevate photography spend a lot of time doing research, you know, finding great locations. It wasn't an accident that photographer was standing there by that lake. With that line of trees, knowing that the sun would come up behind them. They knew that was going to happen, and probably had enough faith to be there multiple mornings in case it didn't happen the first day. And as you get into doing more complex subjects involving people, events, you know, it takes more and more time, both in preparation, knowing when that festival is going to happen, knowing when that moment is going to come about, and time of just being there until something really special does happen, something that elevates the picture beyond snapshot, beyond merely good, to something, you know, truly great, you know?
Well, there's a...
That all takes time.
Yeah.
It takes attention, you know, and it takes devotion, really.
Well, there's a quote in this book from a famous photographer who talks about the morning light, and he says, "Light races across the land in the morning. It will not wait." That's in case you don't recognize, that's from you.
Yeah.
And
right.
There's something that this book, which is organized with early morning light, dawn, and then going through the day, that this morning light is something special. There's something... that the morning light is both a a greater challenge, and also that the reward, the potential rewards may be greater in the morning light for some reason or another. And I want you to share, if you will, if I'm reading you right, share with us the reasons it might be a little bit special.
Mornings are difficult to photograph because you sort of can't see them coming. In the afternoon, the light keeps getting better and better, and you can sort of see where it's going. But in the morning, it's like this: the sun comes up, you can't see it, then all of a sudden, it's there. It happens quickly. It doesn't give you much of a chance as it races by, and so the risks are greater for the photographer, but the rewards are magnificent if you get it. There's also something about the morning in its mood that is difficult to capture. Because we only recognize it very many times in retrospect. It's almost as if it has to happen before we know it, and by the time we know it, it's already passed. So being there with our eyes open, with our hearts open, to the moment is critical, and actually it's difficult to do, and then that's probably why when we get it, when the image really happens, we feel even greater reward. Besides the fact that while mornings are rich for photography, I still hate getting up in the morning.
We're going to give you a rest. Take a little nap. We're going to take a quick break. We're visiting with Jim Richardson, who's one of the principal photographers and contributors to a brand new National Geographic book, Dawn to Dark, Photographs, Magic of Light. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about photography, and I've got a selfish purpose in all of this. But the main reason we're talking with Jim Richardson is because he's one of the principal photographers for the National Geographic Traveler, and his photographs and writing are a big part of the brand new book, Dawn to Dark: Photographs, the Magic of Light. Jim, thanks for visiting us. You're out in Kansas where you live, but you're talking to us, I think, about universal challenges in photography. Your photographs are from all that are represented in the collection are from all over the world. Before the break, we were talking about the challenges of morning photography, and one of a very intriguing picture for me is a picture you took in Brittany in France. It's nobody's in it. Can't even see the sun, can't see the sky. It's just sort of a photograph of a tile floor with light from the outside coming in on it. And I said, "What in the did he just walk into that place and see this extraordinary combination of light and tile and reflection? Or did he set it up? Did he put extra lights on there? How did this picture come about?" And I wonder if you'll tell us the story of this photograph.
That's in Lacronin. It's a town almost entirely built out of granite in Brittany. It's a beautiful, beautifully well preserved town. The church itself is a typical French church, beautiful, ornate. And frankly, I photographed many things in that church that morning. The great statuary, the beautiful decorations, the architecture, all those kind of things. And one of the things that I photographed was that light falling across the floor there at that at a side altar through the stained glass. Beautiful light it was. It certainly was. And the floor worn smooth. By generations of people coming there to worship and pray. As time went on, I'm not sure I recognized that at the time as the photograph of that morning. It was beautiful, but there were lots of beautiful things there. But in the years since, that photograph has been the one that stuck. And people relate to it. People connect in some way, probably more than I knew at the moment when I was actually taking it. So I think it's rather rare that you are actually just, you know, you walk into some place, you see this beautiful thing, you snap the picture, you say, I got it. You know, that's not the way photography works. It's much more arduous, it's much much more time consuming, and it's serendipitous.
Well,
frankly.
You know, yeah, well, this is, I want you to help us now. You may not want to do this, but we talked earlier about all the rest of us now. We got these iPhones. We can take a picture. You know, I mean, we can snap a picture. We're never going to really get, except by some extraordinary accident, get a picture or a photograph like the one that we've been talking about set in this church. But I wonder how do you feel about the one sort of idea about photography is, all right, just go out and take a lot. You know, go out and take a lot. And if you'll take 100 pictures, maybe you may not be an expert, but maybe you'll get something. You know, maybe so. You know, take a look at it. And you did not say that's what you did this day, but you did take a lot, and you were sort of, I'm guessing now, but you were surrounded by a beautiful setting with maybe multiple opportunities for potentially great photographs, and so you took a lot of them. And then this one popped up as. So what's your advice for us, you know, those of us who are amateurs?
Well,
it
is essential that you do one really simple thing. You throw away the bad ones when it comes to pictures. Yeah, you do have to do that. That editing of your own work is both has to do with hubris and it has to do with practicality. And it has to do with intent. You know, you have to, if any photographer comes to me and says they were out this morning and they took a lot of great pictures, then I'm pretty sure they don't know a great picture when they see it.
They got the great ones pop up even for the wonderful photographers.
If a photographer thinks all their pictures are great, I can pretty well tell you they're not very good.
Oh, that's I love that.
If I think to myself that I took a great picture, I want a little red flag to go up and say, "You'd better
somebody
you
else
know, slow
say.
Down, boy. You're not that good." But then the other side of it though is, yeah, you just can't go out and take a lot of pictures and hope the wheat is separated from the chaff in the end. You know, I've done that. I've been out there and I've taken all bad pictures. You know, there is nothing in the randomness of taking a lot of pictures that will guarantee a good one. You know, it comes from that combination of intent and practice and patience and humility and frankly hard work and even then, you know, the few of the few turn out to be really good, let alone great,
Well, Jim, I apologize if people who are listening are having a hard time setting up. Let's return to this picture in this church, which is in crass terms, it's just you just took a picture of the floor and got some great light. But there's something extraordinarily good about this. And so were you just carrying your camera around in your hand and you snap it, or did you have to set up a tripod, maybe get a little bit of light?
No, I didn't have to do anything. That was pretty much available light there. What I do depends on the subject matter, the story, all those kind of things. I do lighting. I do tripods. I do all those kind of things. In that case, no, that was a pretty simple picture to take, actually, you know. And there are times in which the simplicity of taking the picture somewhat masks from you the value of what you're getting. You know, you you work really hard to take a picture and it turns out to be, yeah, that's okay. And then you just sort of turn around and you snap a picture and, wow, it turns out to be something. So you have to be willing to sort of accept that when the really great pictures come along, the world is giving you a gift, you know.
But you've got to be there. You've got to be there to accept it.
You have to be there to accept it. And, you know, you do have to kind of recognize it when you see it. I can't tell you how many times I've been in front of wonderful things and didn't recognize it. That's another potential downfall of the photographer and their ego. But in that case, no, that was a pretty simple picture to take.
Well, there's a picture.
It really kind of was, you know, sort of frame it up and frame it up and snap it, you know, and probably did a little bit of bracketing the exposure to make sure I got the exposure right on at least one frame. And that means, you know, you take some pictures that are too light and some that are too dark, and see which ones work afterwards. You know,
right.
You did a lot of that.
So there wasn't just one, excuse me for interrupting you, Jim, but this wasn't just one shot. You saw something that was good, and you took care to cover it in multiple ways with your camera, maybe shot 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 different angles, different lens settings.
Yeah, you walk around it, and you work it, frankly. You work it.
Well, let me turn to a different picture to maybe you can compare the results. But right before that picture in the book is this extraordinary picture of a Chinese woman maybe a man or a woman in working in the rice fields carrying rice to the terrace fields or water to the
buckets over her shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking, all right, was he just out there in China walking around and he saw this site, or did he stage it, or how do you get a great picture like this of multiple colors, a person in traditional costumes, and on a foggy morning? Yeah. How did you do it?
Well, I saw her coming. that's one thing. It's rare that you sort of, you know, you just see something, you pop the camera up to your eye and hit the button and you get it, you know. This, however, is almost like that, in that I was there, I was really photographing farmers, and I was out in the fields on a foggy morning, and it was beautiful, and I went walking down a little path, and I see this woman walking towards me, and I purposely, at that time, did not photograph her coming towards me. I waited to, because I knew if I did, she would probably shy away. And so I waited till she was past me, walking away into the fog, and turned very quickly and got off, three or four frames.
Well.
You know,
then did she turn around and say, what are you doing?
One of them, the gesture was nice, yes.
Yeah.
So that was one in which I did not and could not have sort of worked it, you know. I worked the whole situation of farmers out in the field harvesting rice, bringing vegetables in the morning, you know, doing all those kind of things. But this particular frame was as close to, you know, catch can as you get in photography.
Well, we're visiting with Jim Richardson. We're talking about a new National Geographic book, Dawn to Dark: Photographs the Magic of Light. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jim Richardson, who is a National Geographic and National Geographic traveler photographer. Much of his work and a lot of his wisdom is in this new book, Dawn to Dark, Photographs, Magic of Light, a great present for the holiday season or for any season, particularly for someone who's interested in doing a better job as a photographer or just for enjoying photographs. Jim, I noticed that you, from time to time, offer other professional photographers and amateur photographers the opportunity to learn from you in seminars and classes. And what I want to do is to see if you'll give us a few little tips that you might give in your classes. And help me with this, but You're an expert at photographing people, and one of the things
on some days.
Well, you proved. Yeah. Now this is we're thinking also in the context of the book about light, and here's what's going to happen to me this upcoming holiday season or birthdays. You know, I've got my little. I used to do photography, but now I'm just. I've got my phone that takes pictures, and they're not, it's technically compared to what I was doing 50 years ago with film and the results I was getting. These are, you can get some pretty good results. But I find that when I try to take pictures of events, of birthday parties, of people at a table, at gatherings, I'm not much good. What are some of the tips that you give people about taking pictures of people?
Pictures of people and events like those things, right?
Yeah.
Well, even more than I said before, be ready to throw away a lot of bad ones.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Good rule. Yeah. To take a lot.
It is absolutely true that when you start photographing people, you know, one person is relatively simple. Two people is more complicated. A whole party is vastly complicated. There's all kinds of opportunities for people to be looking stupid in the background, to be blinking, for the gestures to be wrong, all kinds of things go wrong. So those of us who do people photography like that know that we really, you have to be in the moment and you have to really be paying attention and to be ready for a lot of them to be bad in one way or another. And you may not want, frankly, I must say, if you're there for your kid's birthday party, do you really want to turn it into a photographic session? Or do you want to enjoy the party?
Yeah.
And I think it's wise to sort of, know when to turn it off and enjoy the moment. And not to worry so much about the photographs, and worry more about the time that you're together. Frankly,
oh, what great advice!
It's a different thing for me being on assignment for National Geographic, in a religious ceremony or some great gathering in India, than it is for you at your kid's birthday party. And I do the same thing, When it gets to be the holiday season, I take the pictures to remember, but I don't subject everybody to the full treatment.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Well, I love this, but at the same time, at these moments of special moments, birthday, Christmas, or the first reading of a book, or you mm-hmm. that we do have some responsibility to record, and maybe even some responsibility as a family member to get the best possible image,
sure,
and result that we can, that we'll be proud after discarding 50 of them to take one of them, and
the other thing you can do is sort of to accept the reality. Don't spend very much time trying to shoehorn people into doing something. Most of the time when I'm trying to say photograph kids, the worst thing that I can have is a parent who wants them to look good in the photograph.
To perform. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you do? You just let them loose and...
I say, thank you very much. Go away.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let me follow the kid around.
Let the kids go and take what happens. Yes. And the other thing is, with a bit of time, you get into the rhythm of what's going on, and very many times when you see a great moment, it's actually the second time it happened.
Now, what do you mean by that? I don't understand that. Like,
it means that you see something interesting happen, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you weren't ready for it. But if you wait, it probably will happen again. The kinds of things that we really remember are very often repetitive things.
Uh-huh,
in other words,
uh-huh.
So if you see the little kid come over to the grandparent, during the party, then you and you didn't quite get it, you park by the grandparent and you wait for the kid to come back. It's the second time that it happens that you get the picture.
Oh, what great advice. Yeah, what great
That's
advice.
Right. You know, and very, very often, interesting things happen more than once, and that's why we end up seeing pictures of them, you know. And that little bit of knowledge can help you a lot. It does require patience, and it probably won't happen exactly the same the second time around. But if you're ready, you know, that's how you get ready, frankly.
Well, we need to take a break. We're visiting with Jim Richardson, National Geographic and National Geographic Traveler Photographer, also an important part of a new book, Dawn to Dark, Photographs, The Magic of Light. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Talk, and this is D.G. Martin. We're talking about photography with one of the experts. Jim Richardson takes pictures for the National Geographic and the National Geographic Traveler. He's a part of a wonderful new book, great for holiday giving, Dawn to Dark, Photographs the Magic of Light. And while we've got him, he's been generous to give us a few tips, those of us who are rank amateurs, about maybe getting a few better results from our amateur efforts. Jim, you gave us some great tips about photographing our family or our friends and some bad habit or bad techniques to avoid. The other thing that we love to do is to take pictures on our trips. And we're not you travel all over the world taking pictures. I guess that the advice is that, you know, you said with respect to family gatherings, enjoy the family gathering. Don't mess it up by trying to be a professional photographer. But at the same time, on our trips, we like to take pictures. Do you just travel to these different places and wait for the great photographic event to happen? Or are your photographs improved by doing a little bit of work in advance?
I do a lot of work in advance. Most of my photographs, of course, are on assignment for National Geographic magazine or Traveler. I very much have an agenda. I have a story that we're after. So I spend a lot of time doing research. I'm kind of famous for saying that if you want to be a better photographer, stand in front of better stuff.
Oh, I love that. Say that. Just say that again. That's so important.
If you want to be a better photographer, stand in front of better stuff. Meaning, you know, that I'm a really pretty good photographer if I'm standing in front of the Grand Canyon. You know?
Yeah, go find good things.
I'm not a very good photographer if I'm standing in front of boring stuff. And that business of doing the research, of knowing where things are, where great subjects are, when they look good, what time of day, you know, when the events happen, all of those kind of things are really important and really improve both the photographs, and they improve the photographer as well. That's one of the skills that good photographers have, is that they really they do their homework, and they are rewarded because of it, you know. And you think that they are some sort of magic workers, you know, by just capturing this moment, when in fact they knew it was coming, you know, and they spent a lot of time getting in position and being in the right place and waiting and all of that to pull off that one, quote, effortless moment.
Well,
you know, so I spent a lot of time doing that. It's at least one-to-one, one day in the office researching for every day out in the field, and probably more like 2 or 3 to 1. And people, photographers generally don't want to hear that. They want to sort of, you know, be out there in the moment with their camera, you know, with this romantic notion of the photographer as world traveling gadfly, you know. But the truth is that it's that background work that elevates the pictures in many, many cases.
When you get to, after doing the research and you get to the the setting of the photograph that you imagine might be responsive to your assignment. And then once you get there, do you sort of case the place out? Do you walk around without your camera and wait to be inspired, or do you just start shooting immediately?
I tend to case the place to some degree. Photographers work differently in that regard. There are photographers who really do truly believe and work best when they go in almost cold and they really see it fresh and they're excited by it. I tend to be more reflective and to sort of case the joint. Very often, for instance, if I was doing a road trip for, say, this Traveler magazine, and I'm doing a road trip, you know, the California Coast Road or, the Route 66, something like that. What I might very well do is virtually, if it's not too far to do it, is drive the whole route without taking any pictures, making notes along the way of the best locations, and then drive it in reverse, taking pictures of the places that I knew were the prime subjects of the area. So relatively rarely would I sort of just kind of go out and just sort of take it as it came. You know, I would really do some research, and I would really go take a hard look at it, and then I would go back and work hard at the best locations.
Jim, I want to change directions just a little bit. The digital revolution has transformed photography, I'm sure, for the professionals, but also for amateurs, in enabling us to take many, many photographs and to share them in different ways. And I wonder what have you learned in terms of both for yourself and also for those of us who are amateurs about the maybe some of the unexploited opportunities that the digital revolution has presented to us?
Well, I tell you what, about 10 years ago, I think I did my first digital story. I was one of the early adopters of digital for National Geographic magazine. And I did it by the last story I did on film, I also had a digital camera along. And when I saw the pictures coming out of the digital camera, it was like, that's it. You know, end of story, it's all digital from now on.
Oh really? And, so you just threw away all of your chemicals and all of your stuff. You just
done deal. And the reasons were multiple, and have only gotten better in the meantime. Principal among those is the feedback loop. You get to see the picture. You get to be very experimental out in the field. You can really nail the exposure. You can work in really, really tough, dark situations and make pictures. And that feedback loop gives you the confidence to go after it, you know, to really try.
Well,
you know, we really couldn't do pictures, say, of the Milky Way at night with landscapes before the digital revolution came along. We tried, but it didn't work very well. And now it is glorious. That is just one example of locations that we've been able to see and bring to our readers and do photographs of since the digital revolution. The other thing is just the quality of the images. You know, the color, the sharp.
Yeah, it's great.
Working in the dark.
We've run out of time, but it's a good place to stop because you're talking about the benefits in this book that you've been such a big part of, Dawn to Dark, Photographs, The Magic of Light, National Geographic book. Everything that you're saying right now is well illustrated by that book. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to visit with us here in Chapel Hill about the new book and then sharing generously some ideas for how we might.
It's a great book to be associated with. And I know that I'm going to be giving it as a gift to people who I can't think to have anything else to give them to, because it's a wonderfully reliable gift.
Thanks to Jim Richardson, and thanks to each of you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.